Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Today, we're doing 885B for the guest of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. Dr. Jeff Weber is not a pediatrician, not an obstetrician, not a cardiologist like we normally have or somebody like that. He's more important. He's a veterinarian. Why do I say more important? Well, they're pretty darn rare and they're pretty darn important. He's an Emmy Award winner and has a great website, drjeff.com. He's takes care of the pets of Hollywood stars, Eva Longoria, the Jonas Brothers, etc., Demi Moore. Maybe we should ask him about Magic Johnson's pets, but in any case, he also has a strong interest in influenza, that is, the flu in animals, especially in dogs. Dr. Weber, it's drjeff.com, and his last name is W-E-R-B-E-R. Tell us why you're so interested in the flu in dogs.
Well, you know, for one thing, when the flu is getting a lot of attention lately, you know, this is a flu virus. Now, people always say, wait a second, dogs always had flu. We've been vaccinating for years. And what I have to point out is, no, we haven't, because the typical vaccine that dogs would get is called the DA2PL, distemper, adenovirus type 2. The P is for para-influenza, which means influenza-like. And then sometimes with the L, which is leptospirosis, and of course, coupled with the parvovirus. So we really have never vaccinated for the influenza virus. And often in many municipalities, many states, many cities, depending on what we call for core vaccine, we'll also vaccinate against the Bordetella, which is actually a bacterium. So because of a lot of changes with the avian influenza virus, and there are many, many different forms. We had the H3N2 form that was probably discovered about 6 or 7 years ago. And it gained a lot of attention, but we really didn't see a lot of cases. Now, with the H3N8 version, it's basically a mutation, if you will, of the original. So we're getting all these mutations. And this one is a bit more serious. And what got me so interested
is when you say it's a bit more serious, Dr. Weber, when you say it's a bit more serious, is it a bit more serious for the dog or for the humans associated with the dog? Does it ever cross the humans?
You know, we don't know for sure whether it crosses humans, but we will say that some of the avian influenza viruses can or have been known to cross into humans. I don't know of any cases yet of the H3N8. Crossing into humans, but it's a bit more of a severe viral influenza virus, almost like a cold virus, that can turn into pneumonia if left untreated. Now, I do a lot of rescue work, so we're seeing a lot of dogs coming from really poor conditions, coming from shelters and pounds, city pounds, or hoarders. And these animals are not vaccinated well. They're not well taken care of. So we are starting to see more cases of the H3N8 and still some H3N2 influenza viruses. And so what's happening is there are probably more cases out there than we have identified. Why? Because many of these animals can get well, and they're never specifically tested for these viruses, the influenza viruses. I'm sure many of the veterinarians would think, oh, no, it's probably just a kennel cough, which is really a Bordetella bronchoseptica infection. So we'll treat it with some antibiotics. We'll keep the animal healthy, we'll support, and we'll get over it. And when you think back, oh, my God, it could have been the influenza virus. So it's just gaining a lot more attention. But those cases that are not responding well to treatment, those cases that seem to be getting worse over time, it might be very, very judicious to take your pet into your veterinarian and have them tested for the influenza viruses.
So let's go back a little bit in the history of what this does to a dog. Do the dog viruses such as the H3N8 get transmitted to other pets like cats and birds? I have a whole bunch of questions, obviously, since I know so little about veterinary care. And the second is, do these cause an inflammatory state that causes the equivalent of heart attacks and strokes in animals the way they do in humans?
So what we know, because this is so new, we have not seen, I think there was one report, actually, of a dog giving it to a cat. I still have not yet heard reports of people getting the H3N2, which is the older version. And the H3N8 might be a little bit more virulent, so I would say anything is possible. Because it has a lot to do with the immune status of the intended recipient or not. So if there is bugs, the organisms, the viruses, have a lot greater impact on a being, on a body, that is immunosuppressed. So, can it cross species lines? Well, it did to get from an avian version into the dog. So, and I already heard of a single case going to a cat. So it is certainly possible. I mean, I would be very careful. Now, as far as the ramifications of the virus, most of it to date has been respiratory. Now, of course, if a respiratory infection goes into a pneumonia that affects the oxygen exchange in the lung, then what's going to happen is the heart is going to, of course, get less oxygen, which might affect the heart musculature and also fool the heart into thinking that, oh, my God, I'm not doing my job well enough because the body's not getting enough oxygen. I need to pump harder. So it can also trick the heart into overworking, thinking that it's the fault of the lack of oxygenation in the blood is from the heart's fault as opposed to the lung's fault. So, there's a lot of feedback mechanisms physiologically going on all at the same time that, might affect the heart's ability to work as a pump. And of course, since we're dealing with a virus, we're somewhat limited as to what we can do for treatment because we can't kill the virus. We can, however, prevent the virus, which is where importance of understanding the disease, recognizing the disease, and then possibly starting to vaccinate our pets against this disease.
And now how the human vaccination this year against H3N2 wasn't very good, meaning it was, quote, 35% effective and decreased the symptoms in maybe 80%, but only prevented 35%. How effective are they in dogs? And when does the season for, is there a new vaccine every year?
So these are great, great questions. Again, since we're dealing, especially with the H3N8, something a little bit newer, the vaccine, when H3N2 hit the dog, I just said 6 or 7 years ago, one of the companies that manufactured a vaccine was willing to test the dogs for free. And the reason for that was they would figure they would sell more vaccine. And I had maybe a dozen or so dogs that could have qualified to be a symptom. And I sent in the test, the blood, and they were all negative. So, that was more of a scare. This one, we are seeing more confirmed cases with H3N8. The new vaccine in the market is an H3N2 and an H3N8. I think there are two, maybe three of them out there. The one that I recommend is Zoetis. I use it in my office. And interestingly,
tell me again, what is the one you use? I apologize.
It's made by Zoetis, formerly the Pfizer Animal Health Division of Pfizer, of the Pfizer company. Their animal health division broke away, forming their own company called Zoetis. So it is a Zoetis product, and it's an excellent product, Zoetis. And so I all of a sudden, a client comes in the office, and again, there's so much lifestyle that goes into this. So we're in California, but in general, we have a lot of people going to dog parks and going to doggy daycares and taking their dogs for a walk on Melrose in Hollywood or in Beverly Hills and boarding because they're traveling. So the opportunity for transmission are much greater in lifestyles like that. So one of my clients comes in and he wants to take his dogs to the doggy daycare, and they will not take the dog in unless they've been vaccinated, not only against Bordetella, which is the traditional quote-unquote kennel cough vaccine, but also for against the influenza viruses. So I said, oh, my God, I guess I have to start carrying the vaccine because of that. I have had so many requests from people because the boarding and daycare facilities and the grooming facilities and the dog parks are getting so nervous about this and about the potential human health transmission as well, almost like a pure zoonotic disease, then they are advising or requiring the vaccine for all dogs as well.
And how often, so you give the vaccine once, does it last forever? Do you know how often you have to give? Do they mutate in from season to season in dogs like they do in humans? Or is this, you mentioned this was a relatively rare mutation, but how often do they mutate enough that you need a different vaccine the next year or the next 2 years?
And so the answer to that question, how often do they mutate and are we going to need new vaccines every year? The answer is we just don't know yet. I will tell you this, that the typical recommendation is with pretty much any vaccination, at least for dogs, that you need to give at least two. The one is to start the immune stimulation process. The second one is for what we call the amnemnestic response, which is the memory response, which then allows that vaccine to last for the whole year, or in many cases now, for example, the distemper and parvo vaccines, for 3 years. The rabies vaccine, 3 years, but it used to be every year. Now we're recommending an annual revaccination after the first two. The first two should follow each other by 3 to 4 weeks apart and then give us a long-term response. What's going to happen next year? Only time and research will tell. Are we going to see different strains that are mutating, or is the current H3N2, H3N8 vaccine going to be enough to afford the protection that we're looking for? We'll just have to wait and see as the years go on, and we'll see where we're at.
So we're talking with Dr. Jeff Werber, W-E-R-B-E-R. The website is a great one, drjeff.com, drjeff.com, and which is about as good a website as you can get. He's a veterinarian, to some of Hollywood's biggest stars, including but he's talking to us about the need for vaccinations for dogs and other pets. Now, you take care of others' pets than dogs, right? In other words, Magic Johnson has different pets.
No, we are predominantly, I do dog and cat. I do have one of my associates. I did have to set the leg, a broken leg, of my own Russian dwarf hamster. So go figure. and he's doing great now, by the way. And, I've had the occasional snake and guinea pig and rabbit. I did neuter a pet named Bacon. You might therefore guess that Bacon is a pot-bellied pig. So we do get a variety, but I'm traditionally a dog and cat guy. Now, cats we've been vaccinating cats for upper respiratory diseases for a while, rhinotracheitis, Khaleesi virus, pneumonitis, et cetera. So they have their fair share of respiratory diseases. Cats are pretty well known for it. Whether or not we can use the canine version of the H3N2, H3N8 vaccine for a cat, I'd have to check with the manufacturer to see if they've, gotten it FDA approved. Of course, that has to do with testing and, safety testing and efficacy, et cetera. But, I will say that we're thrilled that there is a vaccine available because we're going to see more and more of these. And again, the lifestyle, especially when it's an outdoor lifestyle, you asked about earlier about seasonality. And, for areas of the country where the winter time usually creates a homebody dog that is not going to be exposed to other dogs, you might see a drop in the contagion factor. But also with the working the nucleus of the family now working, husband and wife together, are both out working. We're seeing a lot more doggy daycare facilities. And with the advent of these facilities, we're going to see, A, more cases of these respiratory diseases, and B, the more of a need for the vaccination. So I think daycare facilities, dog park, doggy beaches, grooming and veterinary.
Is that doggy beaches?
Et cetera. Doggy beaches. You know, because in certain areas, dogs are not allowed on public beaches. So the municipalities have gotten together and they have walled off, cordoned off a certain area of a beach for dogs. So they can run in the sand and go, run into the ocean. One of my dogs loves going to the beach.
And now, do humans get more infections when swimming in coastal waters? That's probably because of the some human waste still is there from overage of rains, etc. But do dogs have a increased infection rate, or cats? Cats, I guess, don't go into the ocean, I assume.
Dogs can get infections. They could be of the same hazard, whether they be jellyfish or you know, something they can hurt themselves on. But I have not, you know, and the waves, even though dogs are traditionally pretty good swimmers, at least most, my Labradors are. My Labradoodle is. My French Bulldogs hate it, but they both have learned how to swim, but they do not like going in the water. But waves scare a lot of dogs. I don't see a ton of dogs going in the ocean. I have not seen firsthand any patients coming in with infections or diseases from having been in the ocean, but it probably can happen. It probably can happen.
We're talking with Dr. Jeff Werber, who is known as Doc Hollywood. He's frequently seen on the nation's top news and talk shows, educating and enlightening pet parents on everything from basic pet care and nutrition to abnormal behavior and prevention disease. He's an Emmy Award winner. It's website to find out more, drjeff.com. Now, Dr. Jeff, you just are you retiring from practice, or are you just doing a consulting practice? I know before we got on, you had just revealed to me that you'd done a couple things very well in life, one of which is get that great website, drjeff.com, that is a rich website for dogs, obviously, as well as a great name for a website, Dr. Jeff, drjeff.com. But you also had, my son must be jealous. His first name is Jeffrey, so I'm thinking he must be jealous of drjeff.com. But anyway,
how the heck did he get drjeff.com, right?
He's a pediatric endocrinologist. You also have just recently sold one of your practices.
Yes,
say it again.
So I'm working full-time. I did sell my practice. One of the very large veterinary consolidators happens to be based in Southern California. And I do a lot of work with Mars brands. I'm a spokesperson for IAMS, and I'm a spokesperson for Neutro and Whistle, which are all Mars products. And lo and behold, Mars had recently, last January, a year ago January, purchased the Veterinary Centers of America. And the Veterinary Centers of America, VCA Hospitals, has been after me for quite some time. And I really do like the company. I know the CEO very well, and the chief operations officer. And they're in L.A. near us. They have recently purchased some of the best animal hospitals in Los Angeles. So I thought the time was right. I knew that I'm have to plan for retirement, but no time soon. So when they came to me and offered me a very fair offer, and I'm going to remain on as medical director, I'll do some spokesperson work for them. I can continue to work for Mars Brands, which I enjoy doing. So I thought, you know what? Why not do it now? I own my hospital building, the landed building. So now I'm a landlord. And I get to concentrate a little bit more on the doctoring without having to run the business side, which they take over. I don't have to deal with the employees. I don't have to deal with HR. I don't have to deal with the insurance. I don't have to deal with inventory. I get to just go in and be a doctor, which is the part I love the best.
That is the part all of us love the best.
And also gives me a little more time to do my spokesperson work and do my media, do my TV stuff. So it was really the best of both worlds for me.
So the bottom line, take your dog to a veterinarian probably at least once a year, maybe in September, October, just like you would your own self for preventive care. Always a good thing to get teeth cared for as well once a year, at least once a year, maybe more often. And that's right. And to see if there is a time for getting a immunization update, a website with a lot of great material for dogs and dog parents are, and I guess dog lovers, is drjeff.com. Thanks very much for coming on as a guest on You, the Owner's Manual radio podcast. And thanks, Ben, for great engineering as usual. But most importantly, thank you for downloading us, listening. Tell your friends about us. Keep rating us. Thanks very much. Thank you.